I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. The election of Donald Trump was a shock for some Americans, and for some, that shock has evolved into anxiety and depression as we see major policy shifts and social changes. In November of 2017, the American Psychological Association released its annual Stress in America survey. It found that nearly two-thirds of Americans say the future of the nation is a very significant or somewhat significant source of stress. This is slightly more than the perennial stressors like money and work. More than half of the respondents said they considered this the lowest point in U.S. history they can remember, a figure spanning every generation, including those who lived through World War II and Vietnam and the Cuban Missile Crisis and the September 11th terrorist attacks. Joining us to discuss how politics and social issues are impacting our mental health and skills to cope with the stress and anxiety is Deb Berglund. She's a licensed social worker in private practice specializing in trauma. She's also director of the Cape Cod campus at Cape Cod Community College for the Boston University School of Social Work. Good morning.
Good morning, Mindy.
Also with us is Jenny Putnam, licensed social worker in private practice specializing in trauma. Welcome back. Good to
Thank
see you.
You
again. Yeah. So immediately following the election of Donald Trump as president, some people were in shock. Why do you think this election hit people, some people so hard?
I think that Donald Trump openly says that he likes to stir the pot. He likes to stir the pot. I don't know if that's actually true or if he just can't help stirring the pot, but it has left people feeling like the ground is constantly changing. He says one thing one day and something else the next day. He has made it okay to say things about minorities that have not been okay to say for a very long time in this country. He has a history of, at the very least, being disrespectful to women and at the most being abusive to women. And it has raised a lot of issues for a lot of people who, even people who are not women or minorities, but who have a history of having unstable people in their lives. Mm. And so that has created a lot of anxiety.
And we're going to get into a little bit of that. But as you're saying this, I'm also thinking for some of those same things, stirring the pot and change. For some people, they like that. So there's people is upsetting, and there are people, his supporters, who are thinking this is great. And we should say this isn't, you know, every election, you know, it's like the same thing with President Obama. There were some people who were very upset when he was elected. And but we've kind of gone from one extreme to the other, right?
Right, right. So earlier we were just talking about how we went from pretty far left to pretty far right in a very short period of time. And so the ground feels really unstable for people right now. And there's some research that these elections, you know, Obama's election and Trump's election, provide a short-term boost in self-confidence, a decrease in stress for the people who elected them. But that doesn't last because, you know, Trump is not following through on the things that he promised. Obama couldn't follow through on all the things he promised. And so even though people who voted for him are often feeling kind of like they're not sure what's next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Jenny, the American Psychological Association has conducted an annual stress survey for the past decade. How different were the findings in the 2017 survey from previous years?
Oh, you're going to call me on memory, remembering the actual
differences. You don't have it in front of you,
I don't
know.
Have
I'm
it
sorry.
In front of me. I do know that people, at some of the things that you already said, that people are feeling more stressed than they have in the 10 years since the survey was started. I know that, and again, to go back to that both sides are stressed, I know that 59% of people who are Republicans are saying they're unsure about the future, and it's much higher for like 87% of Democrats.
Is it also, too, I'm just thinking, you know, you're talking about the uncertainty and people feeling like the ground is always shifting, but there's also the conflict of the conversations we're having with friends and family, because, you know, that's another stressor, right?
I'm so glad you said that. I don't know if you want, I'm talking a lot here, yeah. But, one of the primary ways that we calm ourselves down as mammals, let alone as human beings, is communing with others, looking at each other's faces, talking in soft voices, talking about shared beliefs and shared ethics. And right now we are just so divided, you know, brother and sister, neighbors, spouses, mm-hmm. screaming at each other. And nobody feels safe even in their own homes from that.
Yeah, I do.
I think one of the things that we're seeing from this administration is that this is an administration that doesn't trust. and that talks about loyalty but doesn't feel loyal to mm-hmm. others. And I think that's a lot of what people are experiencing with their friends and family mm-hmm. After this election, that they're finding out friends voted differently than they expected them to vote, that they are finding out that family members have viewpoints and are feeling freer to speak their viewpoints about things that had never been talked about before.
Yeah.
And I think it's making many people feel like the people that they thought they knew the best are people that they feel like they don't know at all anymore.
Yeah. And you even just see on Facebook, people are unfriending because of some of their viewpoints. It's very heated. Yeah. So, Deb, are you finding patients in your practice mirroring what the national survey found?
Absolutely. Yeah. I see both children and adults, and I see children who are talking now, for instance, right after the election, children being afraid that they're friends from Mexico were going to be deported and they wouldn't be in school anymore. Children talking about fear that this country is going to go to war. Children talking about their parents being worried about mm-hmm. the country and not having heard that before in their families.
Yeah, I want to talk about for a second parents being worried. And this is something I don't think we give kids the credit that they deserve as for how much they understand about what's going on in the adult world and the adult conversations. And they overhear this, right? And it creates some fear.
That's right. I think not only do our children hear far more than we know a lot of the time, but they also are paying attention to parents' body language, to the energy that's in the room. They're hearing the news, too, mm-hmm. if it's on. And though they may not always understand it, they are paying attention to the tone of what's on the news, and they are asking questions now.
Yeah. And that fear, I was saying this before in the air, is, you know, a lot of people say, we've never gone through this before. We have gone through this kind of thing before. And I'm thinking, you know, in the 1960s, you know, we had the civil rights movement and, you know, we had the fear of being bombed by Russia. I remember as a kid having to go under the desks at school. That was our sort of, you know, fire drills, if you will. I don't know how that was going to help us, but I can remember that fear of, oh my gosh, we are going to get bombed. And that's kind of what's happening with kids now. It's sort of, we're back there again, aren't we?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So what do we know about the long-term implications of stress and anxiety, both on our mental and physical health?
Well, so stress and anxiety cause all kinds of, I mean, anxiety is our mental health. So that's sort of self-explanatory. Although anxiety can also turn into depression as our bodies get exhausted from always being on alert. But there is also a lot of health damage from always being stressed out. And the normal ones that we would think about involving heart disease and high blood pressure, chronic pain, all of those things. But also stress causes us to behave in ways that impact our health. So we drink more and we smoke more and we practice unsafe behaviors more because we're stressed out. And so overall, being in a stressed situation for long periods of time leads to higher levels of morbidity and mortality.
Mm-hmm. I would say, too, some of the mental health symptoms that we see as a result of anxiety and depression are things like hypervigilance, meaning mm-hmm. constantly scanning and watching for things, mistrust, nightmares, worry, obsessive worry mm-hmm. about things that people feel like they can't control. And like Jenny said, those things then can wear on our physical health, not being able to sleep well, not having an appetite or eating too much, and then feeling bad about yourself and feeling like you can't trust your own instincts or you can't trust things around you.
Well, as you were saying this, I was thinking, it sounds like you'd be more apt to act on impulses than you would normally. We're
exactly.
Normally, let's step back and take a look at this. You know, as I say, sleep on it. And we may be acting out and then later going, oh, why did I do that? All right. So stress is being generated around political issues, for example, gun control, climate change and social issues, the Me Too movement and racial identity. The social issues are very personal for some. Immediately following the election, there was evidence that racial and ethnic harassment increased. And Jenny, you mentioned this. Is this still the case? Are people still feeling that?
Yeah, I think so. There's two parts of that. One is that they are on the increase, and mostly that's been seen, interestingly, in a kind of distressingly in schools. And that may only be because that's where the survey was done of teachers. But it doesn't actually matter if you are the victim of racial hate crimes. The perceived threat of them can still impact your health and your mental health. So there was another study done of just Facebook pages that used the N-word in white communities. And in those communities, both white people and people of color had higher morbidity and mortality rates. So that level of interracial aggression is no good for anybody. Of course, it's way worse for the people who are the targets of it.
Yeah. I think also things like the Me Too movement, which have been wonderful in so many ways in highlighting sexual assault and sexual harassment and helping victims of those perpetrations feel like they can speak up. But for those people who have experienced those things, hearing about it over and over and over and over again in the news, whenever they turn on the news, whenever they open the newspaper, it can also just keep it can re-trigger trauma and keep it alive for them rather than make them feel protected. For some people, it makes them feel now like anybody could be a perpetrator. Mm-hmm. And for people who are often the targets of the Me Too movement, men in particular, there are many men I'm hearing now who are feeling like they're at risk of being accused of something and starting to feel unsafe themselves also. And so sometimes great movements and really important community events and joining things can also have a layering effect that can be traumatizing.
Right. And also, I think the other thing, which I know you have talked about as well for white men, is that even those white men who have never done anything like this and never would, because they do, in fact, worry about women. They think, did I? Did I do something?
When I hugged her, is she going to misinterpret that? Yeah. Our children might be witness to or victims of bullying or racial ethnic slurs at school. What are some of the common reactions children and adolescents have when they're victims of bigotry and or bullying?
A lot of the reactions are very similar to adults, and they can do one of a couple of things. You know, we have survival instincts that either make us go into fight mode, flight mode, or freeze mode. And those are the modes that children go into when they're in environments that they start feeling unsafe in. So it for some children who are feeling bullied, they may go into fight mode and want to fight somebody on the playground or throw negative comments back. For some, they get afraid to go to school at all. And for some, they just sit silently and take it. But for all three of those groups, staying safe in their environment becomes a priority, not learning. In fact, learning becomes really difficult when your brain is worried about those other things.
What happens when I leave this classroom? Is my bully going to be in the hall? And so what if your child is a witness to bullying or harassment that is racial or sexual in nature? You know, some of those videos you see sometimes on Facebook are just so heartbreaking, and it happens. I mean, it happened when, you know, I'm sure when we were in school, but it seems to be on a different level now when you add in social media. At least when we were kids, when we went home from school, it was over, right? But this is 24/7 for the kids nowadays.
Right. Social media is definitely one of the added stressors in today's world. So you were talking about the 60s and all those. But now we have 24-hour news cycles. And so people really cannot get away from it. I just wanted to jump in. But you go ahead and address the
I agree. I actually forget the question now.
We're not just talking about the you know, if your kid
what
is
to do with the kids.
Yeah, what do you do?
Well, I think one of the things that that we always encourage people to do is to talk to other people. And again, social media sometimes can be a healthy vehicle for that in terms of not feeling alone. Again, the Me Too movement's mm-hmm. a good example of that. But face-to-face contact with people, being able to talk to people in person, especially for children, a trusted adult that may be able to share a different perspective or may be able to share things that they can actually do to protect the child as opposed to just be a listening ear. Those are the things that I think we recommend the most is feeling like there are people in the school that are truly safe to talk to and truly able to do something to help the child.
And sometimes that backfires, doesn't it? You know, I think I have a friend, and I remember her daughter was sick all the time. Didn't want to go to school, and then found out because she was being bullied. And then when her mom said, well, we're going to go talk to the school, they were like, no, don't do that. You'll make it worse. And in some cases, that's what happens. Yeah,
that's absolutely right. And so sometimes the safe person to talk to isn't somebody in the school. Sometimes it is a parent or a grandparent or a family friend or a counselor. So having somebody to talk to is important. Also having skills for advocating for yourself, teaching children how to use language in a way that might benefit them and might help them get out of situations, giving them skills to exit situations when they need to. And giving skills to calm down, because as you were saying, that impulsivity to act is so strong that if children don't have some skills for being able to calm themselves down.
And it's interesting. It feels to me that it's changing a little bit with the kids who are witnesses to this, where sometimes now we're seeing those witness kids stand up and say, you know, this is wrong, where sometimes and other times it's like they're egging on the bully, you know, taking the bully's side. It seems, I don't know, and tell me if you think this, I'm wrong, that kids now, there are more kids standing up and supporting what's right.
Right. I think just like the Me Too movement moved a lot of people to women to feel like they could speak up, and in some cases men. I think that the high school kids in Florida who have created this huge movement around gun control have made it clear that children do have a voice and that they really can speak up and make a difference. Yeah.
866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join the conversation. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're discussing how politics and social issues are impacting our mental health and skills to cope with the stress and anxiety. We're talking with Deb Berglund, who's a licensed social worker in private practice specializing in trauma. She's also director of the Cape Cod campus at Cape Cod Community College for the Boston University School of Social Work. And also with us is Jenny Putnam, licensed social worker in private practice, also specializing in trauma. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join the conversation. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So we've been talking about the Me Too movement, which, of course, gained momentum last fall, bringing more attention to sexual harassment. And as we're saying, this might be empowering for some women, but for those who have suffered the trauma of sexual abuse or harassment, as you mentioned earlier, Deb, it can be a trigger. So what are you finding in your practice?
I'm finding a lot of that. A lot of my clients who have trauma histories, particularly trauma histories that involve sexual assault, that they are feeling more unsafe in the world than they've ever felt, feeling like they can't trust their instincts anymore. An example through the Me Too movement was when Matt Lauer was accused of sexual harassment and assault, that clients who felt like they could at least trust Good Morning America, started feeling like they didn't know the people around them and didn't know the people that they felt like they didn't have to worry about. And that created a whole new feeling that they can't trust themselves and their own judgment. Mm-hmm. And those things are really critical to recovery from trauma, is right. being able to trust your instincts again.
Yeah. I'm also thinking, too, you know, you've been through this and it triggers, maybe you've forgotten about it, you've buried it, and now with all this talk, it comes to light and you say, okay, why didn't I say something? You know, mm-hmm. so that maybe that guilt or shame mm-hmm. that you're feeling, like somehow blaming yourself when obviously it's not your fault mm-hmm. that this happened to you. Because when this first came out, I thought, I don't know, do I know a woman who has not been sexually
right.
harassed?
Right.
Right. I mean,
right.
we all can relate to it.
So, you know, we've talked a lot about the people who come into our office who have very serious histories of sexual assault and abuse. But truthfully, after a while with the Me Too movement, I was having dreams that were bringing up old incidents from my past. And I know a lot of other women who were as well, which is part of, you know, why we are wanting to make this bigger statement about what's going on in the world and how to keep yourself sane, is because it's not just people who are easily triggered. It's all of us mm-hmm. who are feeling like assaulted by the news cycle.
Right. So given the controversy around Donald Trump and his administration, many of his policies, it's not uncommon for political conversations to arise in the workplace. Now, if your colleagues don't share your social or political views, this can really create an uncomfortable and sometimes even hostile environment. So what are you hearing from your patients about this, and what is your advice?
Yeah, you know, I actually, because a number of my patients are Trump supporters. And so it's imperative for me to not have that happen in the room with my patients. And I find actually that if you talk about core ethics, core values, often it turns out that we share the same core values, that we're getting different news and different information, but at the base, we share a lot. Mm-hmm. And so my advice to people is to not talk about policy. Don't talk about gun control. Talk about values around guns, right? Mm-hmm. Do you think that guns should be owned and taken care of in a safe way? Do you think children should have guns? Do you think, you know, like core mm-hmm. values is mm-hmm. really...
I think also, you know, this is an environment right now that is challenge oriented as opposed to curiosity oriented. And that's the biggest advice that I give and that I use in my practice, is asking, tell me why that's your position. Help me understand kind of where you're coming from, rather than telling somebody that their viewpoint is wrong because I disagree with it. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the ways I think that we create community and more unity in this environment, is to ask genuinely curious questions.
In a non-judgmental way.
So I think that's really hard. I totally agree with you, but because I actually went to a training on that, and I thought, oh, this is easy because you and I are trained to do that. But the other women in that group could not do it. They were so quickly triggered by statements that they disagreed with, that their executive functioning of their brain just turned off.
Hmm. Right. I think you're right that there are absolutely people who are going to struggle with doing this, but I also think that we can, those of us who can do it, can model it.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I'm seeing with my students at BU is them starting to, they started out their program, this most recent round, really all coming in believing that social workers all thought the same thing and finding out that, in fact, they did not all think the same thing, and facilitating conversation around what brought you to social work, what makes you want to be here, how do you align your viewpoints with the code of ethics for social workers. That's what started to generate conversation and understanding,
ethics, yeah.
even though people were coming from different viewpoints that
yeah.
they had similar
Wouldn't
yeah.
it be great if we could get Congress to talk about what we have in common, rather than constantly knocking the other side down, no matter which side it is? So if you try to initiate a respectful conversation focused on core values, and it's not reciprocated, it can make one feel angry and resentful. So how do you move on from that? You know, as you're saying, there's some people who just are not going to be able to do that. You're having this conversation, and this is a coworker or a friend you really liked, and now you're feeling really frustrated because you aren't able to have these conversations.
Mm-hmm. You go back to things that you do share. You go back to talking about things that you do have in common that you've talked about in the past, and you spend some time not talking about those things that you cannot talk about. I mean, I really think that we have to not just limit our social media, but also in order to get out of this win-lose fight we're constantly in this country right now, it's sort of like do or done to. And nobody wants to be the done to. Right. We all want to be the doer. And so it's a zero-sum game. We have to get out of that and really have the discipline to talk about things we share.
I think we also, speaking of discipline, I guess, need to do things that aren't talking. You know,
yeah.
I think that, you know, when people are anxious, the anxious energy builds up in their body to such a degree that they do become impulsive. They just need to get that energy out in some way. And healthy ways of getting that out, like exercise or dance or singing or running or being in a band or, you know, doing artwork, anything that helps get energy out in a healthy way can bring people's anxiety and their stress level down so that maybe they can go back to conversations mm-hmm. that they might want to have in a healthier way. But it also just kind of lowers that threshold for them around stress in the first place.
Right. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Around the holidays last year, there was a lot of talk about how to handle politics when families get together. The conventional wisdom was don't bring up topics that will generate disagreements. Now, I'm thinking in my own experience, and my husband has an uncle who's now deceased, but on the holidays, we're in opposite, and we both, and it wasn't these angry confrontations. It was a debate that we'd enjoy. We'd go, yeah, what about this? What about that? And, but I think for the rest of the family around us, they saw it as us arguing. We're not arguing at all, mm-hmm. You know. And so what are your thoughts about when you get families get together and you have these conversations?
So what you're talking about sounds to me also a little bit different in terms of people's comfort level with debate,
right,
that you and this uncle were comfortable with debate and the rest of the family was not so much. So that's a whole nother conversation.
That's a different thing. Yes.
Other than that, I'm just going to keep saying the same thing. I think that you either don't talk about it mm-hmm. or you go back to core values or, as Deb said, you do other things together. I mean, singing is a wonderful thing to do together mm-hmm. and around the holidays, perfect time to do that.
I also think that there is middle ground between do it or don't do it. I think, you know, people in a family or in a community being able to say, I can do this for this amount of time, you know. After 10 minutes or something, can we change the subject? Mm-hmm. And I think that ability to limit input is something that, especially with social media, a lot of people have lost that skill, or they don't even know that it's available to them,
right.
That they can watch just the evening news, or they can only turn the radio on when they're in the car, when their child's not with them. They don't have to expose themselves all the time. Mm-hmm. But I think it's one of the things that that a lot of adults forget, and a lot of children aren't capable of monitoring and turning off on their own.
Yeah.
And they need our help.
And that works in a family as well. You know, my dad, who is not, you know, he and I are on the same political side, but he watches the news all the time. It's all he wants to talk about. So I'll go in and I will say to him, you get 10 minutes. and he's very respectful of that. Yeah.
Yeah. I have another great example. A friend who was at a conference, and the talk started when they were in a group. I think it might have been a cocktail party or something. And they were in this group situation where the conversation started to get a little bit heated. And what she did is she changed the topic by saying, hey, you know, I got tickets to this basketball game. Can you guys give me the, you know, background on, you know, like,
nice.
Which I was like, brilliant, right? Yeah. So that whole feeling in the room completely changed around as she changed the conversation to a completely different topic.
Well, so what she also did, because I think that part of what's going on, there's a very interesting Ezra Klein podcast about this, is that we are seeing a real increase in tribalism, what this one woman, Amy Chua, calls tribalism in this country. And so she switched from the tribes of right-left politically to the tribe of supporting a team, a specific team, which brought everybody into the same tribe. So it was sort of doubly brilliant on
right.
her part.
Yeah, boy, that's true. With the sports teams, that is very tribal.
Yes, isn't it?
It is. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join the conversation this morning. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about how politics and social issues are impacting our mental health and skills to cope with the stress and anxiety. We have Deb Berglund, licensed social worker in private practice specializing in trauma, and Janet Putnam, also a licensed social worker in private practice specializing in trauma. 866-999-4626 for your comments or questions. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We know that people gravitate to news coverage that reinforces their views and tend to socialize within a circle of people who have similar political and social leanings. So living inside a bubble often contributes to divides because we don't know one another as individuals, and we start to make generalizations about those who are different from us. So what are your thoughts on that? There are some people who try to balance it out and see what everybody's talking about, but others who stick specifically with their own point of view.
Well, you know, we were just talking about tribalism, and there was a really interesting research done out of Texas, but I think it was done in Minnesota. I'm not positive about that, with elementary school kids. And all they did was they put kids in either red shirts or blue shirts throughout the summer. It was a summer camp kind of program. And in one group of the kids, they just had them wear the shirts. It was no big deal. And in the other one, they had everything organized around whether you were in a red shirt or a blue shirt. And there was no, like, red shirts are better, blue shirts are better. At the end of the summer, they had the kids look at pictures of people dressed in red or blue, and they uniformly felt that the people dressed in, say I'm a red shirt, all the people dressed in red shirts, I thought they were smarter, better, could do no wrong, and all the people in blue shirts, they were not good people, they couldn't do wrong. This sort of tendency to tribalism is deeply ingrained in who we are. And so it doesn't matter, actually, if we listen to other news, because we don't really believe it, because we're so committed to our side of the argument, the tribe we perceive ourselves as being in.
Yeah. Let's go back to the bullying conversation for a second, because you wanted to mention something about the kids who are the victims. And we talked about the social media, and these poor kids go home and they're seeing all this crazy stuff about them.
Right. And they can't get away from it. And so it's really the responsibility of the parents, because kids don't have the executive functioning. They don't have their brains are not developed enough yet to have that impulse control. And so it's really up to the parents, as difficult as it can be, to limit their social media interaction so that they can get away from whatever is going on at school.
Right. And to be aware of their social media interactions, which is, you know, there's always a fine line in parenting between privacy and parental responsibility. And, you know, for those parents who struggle to limit, there are apps out there like Our Pact and things like that that you can program onto your children's phone that limits how long they can use their phone or what apps they can use, so that you're not constantly having to ask and be on top of them too.
And I would say, even if your child's not a victim of bullying, you want to limit how much time they're on social
media.
I mean, you know, it's like, give me the phone and all of that at nighttime, you know, because a lot of these kids, they are literally, I mean, they're on their phones all night long.
Right.
And then you wonder why they're so tired.
Well, the phones are made specifically to addict us. So there's actual conferences that the app creators can go into that teach them how to how to get us addicted to them. So
when we're managing our consumption of social media, there's also many people who are conflicted about staying informed. Not only does that itself kind of generate some stress, but that 24-hour news cycle that we're talking about, the almost constant breaking news can be overwhelming. So what are your thoughts on ways to manage our consumption of news?
You know, I personally have New York Times on my phone, and I read the headlines every morning, and that's it. That's all I do. And that is plenty. I know what's going on. I can talk to people about what's going on. I get more information, of course, from other people who are news junkies. But, you know, I think that whatever is right for you is what you need to figure out. So the question that I have asked my patients is, how much news do you need to, A, be part of, you know, your social group, and B, spur you on to action? Mm-hmm. And how much is making you freeze or making you less able to do things because you just want to argue and fight all the time? And that's when you need to cut back.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I think, you know, asking yourself the question, how do I feel after I watch the news or listen to the news? If the answer is I feel empowered, or I feel calm, or I feel informed, then that's one thing. But if it's I feel anxious, I feel angry, I feel more scared, then that doesn't, again, it doesn't necessarily mean you shouldn't listen to or watch the news. It may mean you need to limit it, or you need to listen to it at a different time of day or in a different format.
I hate to say this, having come from television news, but I don't get anything out of television news anymore. I mean, maybe the news hour, but it's really become almost like headlines. I don't really watch it anymore because I become so frustrated. Because I listen to NPR and I read the newspapers, but I'll hear more of the story. Let's say I hear a national story on NPR, and I hear the whole thing. And then I watch it on a television news, and I'm like, it didn't even give me all of the information. It basically gave me a very quick summary, and it doesn't tell me the why, you know, the sort of analysis of it. And it gives you a different perspective on the world, doesn't it? If you're, you know, even somewhat with the newspapers, you think, you're reading all this bad news, and you think, my gosh, we're really in such a dangerous world. And we are, in a sense, but not as dangerous as it seems if you're really tuned into that all the time.
That's absolutely right. I mean, the truth is that especially sort of middle class white Americans, we're not doing that badly right now. It's pretty good. However, we have a limited amount of attention, and the news is trying to grab our attention. And so the headlines are going to be upsetting to us, which causes our nervous systems to go haywire, which makes us more hypervigilant, which makes us feel like we have to watch the news more. And we can't take in the information, which the news has probably learned. And so they don't give it to us. Mm-hmm. They just want to continually grab our attention so that we don't go to the other channel. Mm-hmm. And luckily, we have stations like NPR that do go in depth and take the time to really educate.
Exclusive. That drives me crazy.
Yes.
All right. So if you're one of those who's tuning out of the news but feeling guilty about doing so, what's your advice? Don't feel guilty?
I think you have to take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. And again, I think there are different ways to be informed about what's going on in the world. And there's different ways to be involved in the world when you're informed. And you know, I'm one of those people, when I go to the gym, my gym happens to have Fox News and CNN side by side. And so when I'm on the treadmill, I look back and forth between the two of them to just see the differences. And it makes perfect sense to me why people in both camps think exactly what they do and think so poorly of the other camp. Right. Because, you know, the only middle ground for me at the gym is the baking show, because it's neither of those.
Right.
And so, you know, I don't have guilt about watching the baking show when I'm at the gym. Yeah. I think that, you know,
keeps your blood level, your blood pressure down.
It keeps my yes. As I'm running on the machine, watching cakes being baked. But that's exactly what happened. Yeah. My anxiety and my stress level goes down when I do that. But when I go back and forth between the two other stations, as informative and interesting as it is to make the comparison, it's pretty crazy making. Yeah. And I think that's what's just happening in the world.
I also think that it's actually hard to completely not know what's going on in the world because we're social animals and everybody else knows what's going on in the world. So even if you weren't part of aware really of the Me Too movement through watching the news, you know about it now. Mm-hmm. You have the opportunity to go on marches. You have the opportunity to sign petitions because friends of yours are going to come to you and say, hey, let's go to this rally.
866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join the conversation. You have a thought or a question for us. 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. One of the interesting pieces of the 2017 stress survey by the American Psychology Association was a majority of both Democrats and Republicans say the future of our country is a source of stress. That's surprising in some ways, but it also suggests special interest groups are capitalizing on what's happening to generate fear on both sides. What are your thoughts?
Yes. You know, I think that it's both special interest groups, but I do feel like the media is also responsible. I don't know how you solve that problem because the media is dependent on our watching it and our paying attention to it to make revenue. And
but maybe that's something we keep in mind, to make revenue, right there. Right. You've said it. I mean, you know, news in, you know, Edward R. Murrow days, it was a public service.
That's right.
And then it got trained, you know, then it got put into the entertainment side of things and it has to be a ratings maker and a money maker.
Right.
And that wasn't always the case.
Right. And it's not very entertaining.
Another interesting part of the survey was that more than half of the respondents said they considered this the lowest point in U.S. history they can remember, a figure spanning every generation, including those who lived through World War II, Vietnam, the Cuban Missile Crisis, and the September 11th terrorist attacks. And in some ways, this is surprising and maybe not so much when you consider that many of the other major events have pulled us together as a country, while the current political climate, on many fronts, is dividing us. So what are your perspectives on that?
I actually think that if we have adaptive processing of information that's happened, which most of us do, we don't remember how stressful things were. I was in New York for 9/11. That was pretty stressful. That was very, very stressful. And I think that a lot of, if you ask people who were Muslim or brown in any way and could be confused as Muslim, you know, Hindu, they found that extremely stressful, and there were higher rates of low weight birth and infant mortality amongst Islamic women. And so I think it depends on who you're after 9/11.
Right.
I think it depends on who you're speaking to.
Yeah, I was going to say the age group because, you know, I mean, if you're, you know, a young adult, you don't really remember Vietnam or the Cuban Missile Crisis.
That's right. Yeah. And you were saying earlier that it feels very similar to you to when you had to duck and cover.
Right.
And
so
I think that part of that is just that people don't remember. And the other part of it is, not to be like just repeating myself over and over again, but the 24-hour news cycle that we cannot get away from. The stress.
Right.
And in the past, we could get away from the stress and we could go bowling in our bowling team or we could go hang out with our garden club. And those
But we can still do that.
We can, but those things are fewer and fewer.
That's true.
I think one of the things that feels different with this administration is the lack of unity at the top. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that people rely on unified leadership. And when that's not there, or when the leadership keeps shifting with people resigning, people being fired, people changing positions, positions changing from minute to minute, that makes people feel very unsafe.
Change is not welcome for a lot of people. Change is a hard thing.
Change is a very hard thing, and especially when it is happening daily and it's happening over, you know, in the grand scheme of things in history, a year is not that long of a period of time. But this has been an unsettled administration since the beginning and an unsettled party behind this administration. And I think when that is feeling as insecure as it feels right now, I think that makes people under that administration feel unsafe as mm-hmm. well, and like there's fear around whether they can trust the leadership.
Yeah, I know. And one thing I was as you were talking about, and everybody's frustrated with Congress and the divide there. But I think if we look locally and we look at the Cape is pretty, you know, even handed as far as our representation goes. We know we have Republicans and Democrats, and they get along, and they co-sponsor legislation together, and they're friendly with each other. And it's kind of like, you know, we talk about trickle down. I'm kind of hoping for trickle up, you know,
yes.
or whatever that would be. So I suppose that might give you some solace in that, you know, people go, oh my gosh, what can I do? You look at how big some of these problems are in the world, and it can be so overwhelming and so frustrating. But, you know, if you focus on something that you can have control over, something local. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that is a great point. One of the things in this sense of uncertainty is that we also feel like we have no power. And in fact, we may not in Washington, but we really do here on the Cape. And, you know, you can join your local Democratic or Republican party in your town. You can become involved with the selectmen. You can do all kinds of things that give you a sense that you have a little bit of voice. And a little bit of that can really go a long way.
Mm-hmm. Deb, what are your thoughts?
Well, and I think, all movements come from the people. They come from the bottom up, and the influence comes from the bottom up. And I think, again, you know, from the Parkland shooting and the students in Florida who are feeling empowered to take on the NRA and to speak for other students and to generate a march that drew hundreds of thousands of people. I think
worldwide.
Yeah. I think, you know, that really speaks to the power of using your community and using the people
right.
around you.
And you never know where, you know, that when you start that movement, I'm sure they weren't expecting it to become as large as it is. But also distressing, you know, here in a time when we're really, you know, wishing for civil conversation and dialogue. And yet we see, again, a lot on social media and some not so much, you know, the criticism of these kids. And these are kids.
Oh, it's heartbreaking. It's really heartbreaking. And again, I think the answer is to get off the social media and not engage. I think that's so hard for people who are Facebook junkies not to engage in those conversations. And those don't go anywhere because both of you are in fight mode mm-hmm. and it's just going to escalate.
A survey conducted by Dr. Martin Sigelman, some call him the founder of positive psychology, found that regardless of where Americans lived, we have commonly endorsed virtues, which you're talking about, Jenny, earlier. Those are kindness, fairness, honesty, gratitude, and good judgment. So how can we use this knowledge to help us cope with today's political and social climate?
I feel a little bit like a broken record, but
it's okay. Maybe people hear it.
Right. I think that when you're in the midst of that, you either ask curious questions and try to find the shared values, or you model kindness. You model kindness. Mm-hmm. And so when someone is saying, you're trying to take away my guns, you say, wow, you seem really, really worried about that. Mm-hmm. Rather than saying, you know, you're trying to kill everybody with your guns.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. Model kindness.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about it, even when somebody's really angry and you're talking in kind tones and with kindness, it's hard to keep yelling at somebody who does that, isn't
right.
it?
Right. So Basil van der Kolk, who Deb mentioned earlier, is a incredible expert in trauma. And he says, imagine a police officer coming after you've been speeding. He stops you and you get out and he's screaming at you for speeding. And how are you going to react? Versus one who pulls you over and says, excuse me, ma'am or sir, do you know how fast you were speeding and how you're going to react just physically? Just
right.
think about how physically you're going to react.
All right. So, Jen and Deb, you're both hosting a discussion titled Staying Sane in an Insane Feeling World that's coming up on Saturday, April 28th in Falmouth. Real quick. Real quick, tell us about it. But Staying Sane in an Insane Feeling World, Saturday, April 28th. 4:30 to 7 at Falmouth Academy, and we'll have more information about it at our website, capeandislands.org. Deb Berglund and Jenny Putnam, thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.